The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the Thanksgiving version of the Providence Journal Pick and Pop podcast. This is Kevin McNamara with Bill Koch. Bill, happy Thanksgiving to you, sir.
Kevin, happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
I'll be in lovely Rhode Island with family and friends. You'll be in lovely Brooklyn. I imagine there's lots of good turkey in Brooklyn as well as Rhode Island.
Well, what I'm expecting, since the Barclays Center is a pro arena, I'm hopeful... for a rare time in my life, I'm optimistic that they might put out some Thanksgiving dinner for media dining.
I like your chances, actually. I remember, I don't know how many years, all the years run together, but a few years ago I was with the Rams in Orlando. We played Kansas.
Yes, the Old Spice.
Yeah,
yes.
And they came through with some Disney, at Disney, ESPN Zone down there in Disney, and they came through with some outstanding array of Thanksgiving treats.
That was back when Perry Ellis was about 20 and not 27, right?
Yes.
His final year of college basketball.
Yep, and Devontae Graham may have been a freshman, and now he's a senior, which is pretty amazing.
Frank Mason.
They had some players.
It's a pretty good team.
They had some players.
Yes.
It was a good tournament. It was a good tournament, as a matter of fact. But we're going to come back to the Rams in a little bit. They have a big game on Thursday night against Seton Hall. But we're going to start with the Providence Friars on this podcast. The Friars are coming off a two-game trip to Madison Square Garden in the 2K Classic, where they really didn't play all that well in fighting past the Washington Huskies, 77-70. And then really put a pasting on the St. Louis Billikens, 90-63. Bill, I'm not quite sure if you had a chance to watch a little or a lot of the Friars. You know, two good wins, one very, very impressive win over St. Louis. And to be honest with you, I came away impressed with the Friars and not all that impressed with the two opponents. I don't think I saw an NCAA team in the bunch. The question is, did I see a top 100 RPI team with St. Louis or Washington?
Well, the first game, I think the important takeaway from that one was Rodney Bullock showed up in that game. He had 17 points. He was, you know, sort of playing well offensively. He was a factor in that game when they needed him to be, because that was a tight game all the way through, as you know. You know, Washington had a couple pretty good players. Noah Dickerson impressed me. You know, big guy, mobile. Tough matchup for Providence. And then the second game against St. Louis, Kevin, I just think St. Louis ran into a buzzsaw. That was an A-plus performance from Providence. You know, shot well over 50% from the field. They were 9 for 10 from three-point range. According to our friends at KenPom, they averaged 1.36 points per possession. Now, last I checked, field goals are worth 2. Right. And three-pointers are worth 3. 1.36 points per possession. That's just an avalanche against the Billikens. Very, very impressive.
Yeah, no, it was a freakish offensive performance. They ended up shooting 62% from the field. As you said, 90%, which is actually a program record in three-point percentage for a game, minimum 10 attempts, 9 for 10. 21 assists, 31 field goals. And the night before against Washington, 22 assists and 25 field goals, which is really that's really difficult to do. I can imagine this surging up those offensive efficiency ratings, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I get it, and it certainly can carry you a long way in the eyes of opponents. What's interesting is to see the depth right now that Providence is showing. I'm doing an advance for the Belmont game on Wednesday, and you know, this is a very different cast of characters that Ed Cooley has right now. You know, we all remember the days when Bryce Cotton literally played 39 minutes a game. LaDante Henton never came out of games. Chris Dunn never came out of games. Ben Bentel. That's a different story this year. Right now they have no one averaging 30 minutes a game, and they have 10 players at 15 minutes or above. And I think that's the plan going forward.
Well, you know, it speaks to the depth when you look at the numbers against Washington. A few too many turnovers for my liking against a team that played a lot of zone. But you had three players in that game who had at least 5 assists. Kyron Cartwright, who you would expect it from. Malik White, who was a nice surprise off the bench. He led the team with 6. And then Alpha Diallo, when you can have sort of that big perimeter wing presence who is more known as a scorer. When he's passing the ball well with five assists, you know, that's a really good thing. And then again, St. Louis, you know, maybe a little bit more of what you would expect. Kyron Cartwright at eight assists, but you still had, you know, at least four guys with three apiece, you know, and five guys with multiple assists in that game. So it just speaks to the culture that Ed Cooley has created there. He's always had a good point guard, whether it be Bryce Cotton or Chris Dunn, you know, now Kyron Cartwright. But when that sort of spreads to the rest of your team, it really allows you to look the way they did against St. Louis, which was so, so impressive at that end of the floor.
Through four games, Providence is assisting on 66% of their field goals. That's on par with the best numbers that the school that the program has ever recorded. That goes back to 1978 when they had 67%. Now, obviously, we got a long way to go. That's only four games in. You know, non-conference is different than conference play. But again, the depth and the offensive unselfishness are jumping out for the Friars right now, and they're going to need it in two home games this week when they host Belmont on Wednesday, and then the Boston College Eagles on Saturday night. Bill, I'll talk a little bit about Belmont, and you can flesh it out because you're familiar with them. You saw them last year in Kingston. For anyone who doesn't know Belmont, you just need to pay attention a little bit here. Number one, they're the dominant program in the Ohio Valley Conference, and the Ohio Valley always produces a team that's very dangerous in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Stubbed their toe last year in the semifinals and ended up going to the NIT, where they beat Georgia and lost at Georgia Tech. Rick Byrd is in his like 35th year at Belmont. You know, he's truly a legendary coach at the Nashville-based school, and they just coming off a win over a city rival, Vanderbilt. So they clearly have a very good team, and Providence is going to have to play well to win.
Yeah, they have two good wins already that should move the needle. They beat Vanderbilt, and they also beat Middle Tennessee, you know, who would have been a pick in...
On the road.
Yes, who would have been a pick in a lot of your brackets last year with Giddy Potts and the crew. That's a very dangerous team there, and to knock them off 68-63... or 69-63, I'm sorry, is a very good result for them. You know, they've won four in a row here after an opening loss to Washington by four, which was a true road game coming out of the blocks.
And supposedly they had them. They had a lead inside of 5 minutes, and Washington rallied for a win.
You know, I can speak to what I saw last year in Kingston. They played without Evan Brads, who was a mid-major All-American, and still gave Rhode Island all they could handle in an 82-73 game. They had five players in double figures in that one, and most of that cast of characters is back. You're talking about Amanze Akizi, who leads the team. He's pushing 20 points a game. Dylan Windler also played in that game. He had 16 against URI, and he's averaging 16 right now. Kevin McLean came off the bench for double figures. He started every game this year for Belmont, and he's at 15 a game. So you're talking about a team that, you know, is pretty good offensively. They spread it around a little bit, and they're clearly not afraid to play elite opponents. And if Providence doesn't have, you know, full focus on this game, they could get clipped at home.
Yeah, I was up at Providence practice on Monday, and it certainly seemed pretty clear that Ed Cooley has gotten that direction across. As all the guys pretty much said, you know, very difficult team to defend. They averaged 15 three-pointers attempted a game. They attempted, I believe, was 41 in a win over Houston Baptist. So they really fired away, averaging 11 threes made a game. So, no, I'm sorry, they averaged 30 attempts a game. 33-point attempts again.
Just 30.
Just 30. So run and gun, I guess, is the name of the game there.
And that was, you know, largely their undoing against Rhode Island last year. They were 5 for 27 from 3. So the old phrase, you live by the 3, you die by the 3.
Well, and, you know, Dan Hurley's teams always defend the 3-point shot very well.
And Ed Cooley's
Ed Cooley's have as well, yes. So far this year, anyways, as a... He fumbles through his stats. Teams are only shooting 27% from the three-point line thus far for the Friars. So obviously that's going to be a really big focus on Wednesday night. And then Saturday, you know, it's funny. At this point, people just assume that Boston College is, you know, going to finish in the bottom of the ACC and is in a perennial, you know, rebuilding situation. Well, I just have to remind Friar fans, they beat you last year. and their backcourt is returning and will be here on Saturday night. Very dangerous Boston College team, much improved under Jim Christian.
Yeah, they blew out LaSalle in their last game. A LaSalle team who I think could do some damage in the A-10. They've got one of the five best players in the league, in my mind, in B.J. Johnson. Boston College ran him out of the gym 62-61 on Sunday. Just not a close game at all. You mentioned their backcourt, and these were guys who did real damage against Providence last year. You're looking at Jerome Robinson and Kai Bowman, who would play for just about any backcourt in the ACC, not named Duke or North Carolina. Two excellent guards. They have a graduate transfer named Deontay Hawkins, who's from Southern Illinois. He can certainly threaten a double-double on a given night. You're just looking at a team that, yes, they're always going to struggle in the ACC. I've said this before. I think they're in the wrong league. They've isolated themselves in New England. It's going to be very hard for them to make up ground on the North Carolinas and the Dukes and the Louisvilles and the NC States and the Virginias of the world. But this program is going in the right direction under Jim Christian. It's going to be hard for them to make, an 8 or a 10-game jump in one given year. Their competition is just too good. But, much like Belmont, you underestimate these guys at your own peril because they have quality players.
And quality guards. I'm a big Bowman fan. As a matter of fact, I know that the NBA scouts know all about Bowman. They see him as a physical, strong combo guard at the next level, and I think we'll see some NBA guys in here on Saturday night. So obviously a big week for the Friars to be able to get two wins this week and go to 5-1 would be a really good start and a nice bounce back from a home loss against Minnesota. So that's it for the Friars, and then the Rams I think face one of the biggest weeks of their season because they do have two really golden opportunities for big time wins. Seton Hall is ranked 15th. I'm not even sure what they are this week, but I think maybe 17th. I actually ranked them 14th. I think Seton Hall is has a golden opportunity to unseat Villanova and win the Big East this year. And then if I think Virginia will beat Vanderbilt in the other side of the event, the preseason NIT, on Thursday night. So the chance to play both Seton Hall and Virginia, two teams that will be ranked, is just a great opportunity for the Rams.
Seton Hall is 20 this week in the AP poll, up from 22, which, I agree with you. That seems a little low to me. You're talking about a team with elite talent. Angel Delgado is an NBA player. Dan Hurley spoke yesterday at practice about, he's looking at Desi Rodriguez, he's looking at Kadeen Carrington, and, he feels like those three guys could all be the best players at their positions that Rhode Island plays all year. When you face that kind of talent and you're down EC Matthews and you could be down Cyril Langevin, who is battling a groin injury, who did not play against Holy Cross. You're also trying to deal with what's probably going to be a road game on a neutral court. I've heard that Seton Hall has sold a fair amount of tickets for this. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very, very difficult game for them.
Well, you just hit the big personnel issue on the head. They're going to need Cyril Langevin if they're going to, I think, have a chance to win either game this week. But then again, groin muscle injuries are really finicky, and I think the last thing they want to do is to push Cyril a little bit, and then he's set back even further. I can see him not being able to play in one of the two games, but boy, I'd really like to see him try to play in one. But obviously, I don't know the severity of the injury.
They were testing him yesterday. He did some light running, some light jumping, did some change of direction drills toward the end of practice. He was not involved in any of the contact portions of practice, and. To your point, I think they're going to be very careful with him. They want this to be, if it has to be, a 2 or 3 game absence as opposed to a 9 or a 10 game absence where he misses 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's the disaster scenario for them because they are very thin at that position, as we've talked about leading into the season.
Rams are coming off I would call it a workmanlike 88-66, 22-point win over Holy Cross. First half where you said, okay. They clearly miss Langevin and Matthews. And then the second half, where offensively they really clicked very, very well, shot 58% from the field and outscored Holy Cross 48-29. Overall, this team, this group that took the floor against Holy Cross is a pretty good team, but it's not the team that we think that Rhode Island can be, obviously, with down two starters.
No, they sort of pulled away at the end. They were, you know, sort of in like a 5-point game with about 12 minutes to go, and then they just turned on the style.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key for them, obviously, in this one was the inside-outside balance. You had Jared Terrell with 25. That matched a career high. Did it very efficiently. He was 10 for 16 from the field. And then Andre Berry inside had 20 points. He was 9 for 11. That's a career high for him. And, you know, you just look at him around the basket. I was watching the game with Bill Reynolds, yeah, who was there, and, you know, I said, Billy, you know, when you look at a guy who has this kind of touch around the rim, how many guys do you see who have this? And the point he made was, it's something that you don't teach. He just has a very innate ability, you know, 10 feet and in, to finish, and does it with great regularity, whether it be off the offensive glass or when they post him up. And I think, you know, that's something that Dan Hurley also mentioned yesterday at practice, is Hassan Martin was power in there. He was strength. He would go through you and get to the glass and dunk on you or lay it up and draw a foul. Andre Berry's a little more finesse, and in that way, he's probably a different type of player than Dan Hurley has had in his 6 years in Kingston. And, you know, it speaks to maybe this balance is helping them from an offensive standpoint. This is the first time in Dan Hurley's Rhode Island tenure that they have scored 80-plus points in three straight games.
That's interesting. Really? So obviously out in Nevada as well, that's right. I think Andre has two things that every good big man needs, and I know it sounds basic, but you need good hands and good feet. You know, Berry has excellent hands because he catches everything, and he offensive rebounds pretty well. So if he's going to catch the ball close to the rim, he knows how to put it back. And then he doesn't travel much. You know, a lot of big guys, you know, they might be able to get their hands on balls, but they travel.
Yeah, they shuffle the feet. You're right.
And he really doesn't do that. Now, the flip side is, at the other end of the floor, he struggles. You know, that's where his quickness and lack of jumping ability hurts, where obviously Hassan Martin was one of the better, you know, defensive big men that Rhode Island has ever had in its history. So I'd like to go to war against Seton Hall with Andre Berry and Cyril Langevin. I think if we throw Andre Berry as the lone big guy up against that team, you know, we could be looking for some trouble. But, you know, that's obvious.
And I think with, you know, with Martin gone and Karan Iverson gone, you've lost a fair amount of your rim protection there. Opponents right now are shooting 55% from two against them, which is in the 270s in the nation. They're only blocking 4.5% of shots against them, which is in the 300s in the nation. They were in the top five last year. Yeah,
only had one against Holy Cross.
But the interesting thing is, now that they're playing three and four guards at a clip, their steal numbers are way up in turnover percentage, you know, on defense. You know, you're talking about a team that's in the top 15 in the country. They're forcing turnovers on 26% of opposing possessions. And Stan Robinson is the number one individual defender in the country, forcing turnovers at almost 9% on the defensive possessions he plays. He had another five steals against Holy Cross. He tied a program record with seven against UNC Asheville. You know, so maybe playing against Seton Hall, who Kadeem Carrington is kind of a forced point guard.
He is.
He's not necessarily a true point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Rhode Island digs in against them, is able to force some live ball turnovers and get some easy offense before the big guys like Delgado have a chance to set up.
There's no question that the strength of the Rams kind of plays into the weakness of Seton Hall. Their backcourt outside of Carrington, who is more of a two guard, he's a trans, you know, he kind of swings back and forth, is young and inexperienced. And that's the exact type of opponent that guys like Robinson and Jared Terrell and, you know, and Fats Russell, Jeff Doughton, everyone, they just got foaming at the mouth when they see those young, inexperienced point guards. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Bill, I'm curious, going forward, any concerns with Rhode Island's depth right now? I wanted to see a little more out of Nicola Akeli. I do like Ryan Preston. I think he's showing that junior college rust. If I had to say who's going to be, you know, maybe that sixth, seventh guy by Atlantic 10 time, it's Ryan Preston. I think the development of those two guys, one of the two, really has to be a consistent player.
Well, against Seton Hall, you worry about it, you know, only because they're a very quality team. You know, and you'd worry about it if you had to play Virginia, too, because, you know, Virginia had a nice road win at VCU and did it scoring the ball, which Virginia doesn't usually do. Kyle Guy had 29 points in that game, and Ty Jerome had 13 and 7 assists with no turnovers. I can't imagine there are many opposing point guards who go to the Siegel Center and put up a line like that.
Young team, by the way. I just want to throw that out as well. This is not, you know, pack line defense, you know, top 15 Virginia team. You know, if by chance the Rams have a chance to play them, they're I can't imagine many teams in the country that are more difficult to prepare with just hours in preparation. But, you know, they still have plenty of talent.
Plenty of talent. You know, you're looking at Vandy, as you said last week on the podcast, that's probably a toss-up game on a neutral court. And then coming out of that, you play against Brown, who's a little bit on the small side, so you wouldn't necessarily miss Langevin as much in a game like that. But then the next one is Providence. And, you know, if you have Bullock and Nate Watson and Khalif Young playing at an elite level and Langevin is unable to go, you worry about Berry in terms of whether or not he wears down or commits fouls. If he has to play 30 minutes in that game, you know, you worry about, has a Kelly found his footing yet? Has Ryan Preston found his footing yet? In a way, this does force those guys into the lineup. It forces them to get minutes. You hope the positive spin is that that forces them to get a little more comfortable in their roles.
Okay, now here's the unfair question. Do you have Cyril Langevin play two games this week, Seton Hall, and we'll give him a win against Seton Hall, and then Virginia, and then he can't play against Providence?
I sit him all the way to Providence. I do.
I don't think you have a chance to win either game this week if you don't play him against Seton Hall and, you know, Vandy or Virginia.
Even in that case, neither one of those games is a bad loss. You're on a neutral court. If you get a home win over Providence and Cyril is 80-90%, you have a better chance of winning the game. That's going to be a top 50 win this season. Then you take your chances. You flip a coin with Alabama. You have 10 days off after that for the exam break. And then you have three non-conference home games in a row, which are all going to be sort of fringy top 100 games. If you're able to win all three of those, you come out at about 7-4 with a top 50 win over Providence and four or five top 100 wins. Mm-hmm. I would much rather have that than take a risk in a game where I'm going to be an underdog against Seton Hall or against Virginia, and in a game where I shouldn't need him against Brown. I'd much rather take the more preventative course.
See, he's actually thought about this, fans, so I really appreciate that. And I'm not surprised. This is what Bill Koch brings to the table. Hopefully it's a nice Thanksgiving table for all of our listeners out there. Bill, wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week.
Now, happy Thanksgiving to the listeners. Thank you all for tuning in, you know, and hope your day is wonderful as well.